Welcome to another edition of Teaching Restored, where we help teachers of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ be more effective teachers. I'm Kevin Jones.
I'm Julie Hilliard.
And we have Kurt Frankum with us from Leading Saints. We're excited to have you with us, Kurt. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin, Julie. It's fun to be here. So
good. Oh, and it will be a lot of fun. We tend to laugh a little bit and maybe mess up our words. So
and make up words.
And what?
And we make up words sometimes too.
Yes, we do. So really, if there were any words you want to make up, feel free, Kurt, to make it up and you can coin it.
Love it. Yep.
Okay. Now, if you would, Kurt, tell us a bit about you, your family, what you do, all that good stuff. Tell us about you. Sure.
Yes. So I was born and raised in West Valley City, Utah, it's just the west side of the Salt Lake Valley. And I currently live in American Fork, Utah. And I'm married to Alana, who is from a potato farm in eastern Idaho. And my father-in-law told us we'd never go hungry because we'll always have potatoes. So we love some nice, good potatoes. We have three kids and a dog. And I am the executive director of Leading Saints, and I host a podcast by the same name. And we strive to create content to help Latter-day Saints be better prepared to lead. And, you know, really leading and teaching is they're synonymous. So we've done a lot of content around teaching and have interviewed a lot of people just about, you know, how to stand up in front of people, especially in maybe a Sunday school class or teaching youth or Elders Quorum, Relief Society, and how to teach effectively. So the fact that you guys are doing this type of content, I'm really excited about. There cannot be enough content around teaching and creating a better experience there. So that's a good summary of me. I don't know if I left anything out.
I like it.
Your dog's name. I mean, we got to know.
The dog's name is Bella.
Bella.
Kevin, I think that's rude. You asked the dog's name, but not the children's names.
Well, that's true. Sometimes you don't want to talk about the children's names. I mean, you know,
that's true. You don't want to share that publicly, but I do have to say my daughter would actually say that our dogs are more important than the other children in our family because she thinks animals take precedence over humans.
Nice. Yeah. Not in this house, but we love our dog.
Our house, a little confusing.
Well, good. Thank you. So I got turned on to Leading Saints years ago, and I've been listening to it, and there's just so many fabulous, so much great content out there that you've created that I kind of assumed that everyone knows about Leading Saints. And I was at a baptism recently, and I turned around to a good friend and his wife and started saying, hey, did you listen to this podcast? And I'm like, no, Leading Saints. And I'm like, okay, dude, where have you been? I thought everyone knew about it. So if anyone doesn't know about Leading Saints, it's like a requirement. You have to go there. You have to start listening because it's that good.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate you sharing the word we geek out about all things leadership and teaching as well from time to time. So
one of the things that I love, and tell me if I've even got this right, but I love that you're interviewing people that are just, you know, doing their callings, but doing it well. And what you're trying to kind of pull out of them is, you know, what are you learning as you're on this journey? And, you know, obviously people are given, you know, special spiritual gifts and capacities when they're called to something. And I totally believe in the power of that. And I feel like you're trying to kind of pull that out of them. Why that? Like, I mean, you could be calling on all of these experts and historians and, you know, obviously the church is full of people who are, you know, brilliant and publicly known for being that way. Tell us why you lead with people who are just like us.
Yeah, sure. Well, and definitely we kind of cover both bases, right? On Saturday is our sort of our expert focused interview. I'll talk to authors, therapists, PhDs, and, you know, the people who've maybe done the research around leadership principles, and we'll do a deep dive there. But then on Wednesdays, we call it our How I Lead segment, where I'll talk with leaders across the world. And I remember being a young leader and serving and facing what I thought were very unique problems. And I always wondered, you know, what's the other guy doing? And sometimes it's easy to maybe catch the the person who's in your same calling, but maybe in the neighboring ward who share your building, you just grab them in the hall and have a good conversation, or maybe on the stake level, you know, they facilitate a conversation there. But, you know, it's interesting just to hear how people around the world are engaging with these problems. So I, you know, I interviewed Relief Society presidents in Australia, bishops in Spain, or Sunday school presidents in, you know, Massachusetts or wherever it be. And just hear, you know, how is it that you lead? And we never try and pretend that they have it all figured out or they have the 5-step plan that if we'd all do it. But it's just interesting how this, the most, what some may classify as the ordinary person, has done something a little bit different and created extraordinary solutions and approaches. And, you know, somebody in a different part of the world can hear it and be like, that's interesting. That may not work exactly like that person does in my ward, but I'm inspired and maybe I can tweak a few things. And I get emails, several emails every week of leaders in different parts of the world saying, hey, I listened to this episode. Now we're doing this different. Or, you know, we great. Started that type of activity here and we're seeing great success. And that just, man, that just warms my heart hearing that our content is influencing positive leadership around the world and creating a more, a better experience for individuals attending church and engaging with the kingdom of God in that part of the world. So it's a lot of fun.
That's great. That's, you know, awesome. It is interesting that you know, there are typically in a building, at least within the United States, multiple wards within a building, and they could be doing completely different things and not even know about it, but they're sitting basically right next to each other. And one has a great idea that the other had never even thought of before. So I love the format and being able to bring in everyone and say, how do you do it? What works? Yeah. What doesn't work? And
I think
and
I've been most
sometimes what really doesn't work.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We can learn from each other's mistakes just as much as successes, exactly. Right? Sometimes even more exactly. So. But I think I'm most drawn to that aspect of leading saints personally, just because I, you know, there's a lot of access to experts and all of the research. And so I've really been drawn to that personally. And I mean, I would love to hear some of the things that have been most impactful for you personally as you've been conducting these interviews, some of the things that you've learned from people. And I'd love to gravitate specifically to people who are functioning in some kind of a teaching capacity about what they've done that's really inspired you personally.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's a lot coming to mind and feel free to jump in or interrupt me. But, you know, I just think of like, someone that you should have on your program was Richard Bernard, who he works with the church around the Gospel Library app. And, you know, in a teaching setting, it can be so powerful not to just assume, you know, I think we walk into a, you know, maybe a Sunday school setting and everybody, we know everybody sort of has their mode of studying the scriptures, right? There's the old school high priest in the corner with his big, you know, quad that that he has it laid out open on his lap. And maybe the majority of the room is on their phones. And a lot of them are most likely in Gospel Library app. Maybe others are playing Brick Breaker or, you know, whatever it may be. But, Richard Bernard does such a phenomenal job of training those in terms of the gospel, using the Gospel Library app. Even the simple tips of, you know, in sacrament meeting, when there's a hymn that comes up, you can just hit the search icon and just type the number in, and it's going to default to the hymn number, right? So you don't have to like tap a billion times, go into the library, right. Then the hymn book, or even looking up a scripture. You know, if I want to go to 2 Nephi 4, I can just type in N4 and it's going to default to that position. So it's cool. I'm thinking of Brother Comstock as well. He's in St. George area, seminary teacher, did an advanced degree about electronic scriptures and teaching, especially youth in that context. And he's gone as far as he has a large screen TV, where that's also a touchscreen TV, and it pulls up the Gospel Library app right there in the classroom and taps around and shows people how to use the app, how to tag, how to leave notes, journal entries, all that. So that's been one, you know, maybe more practical approach of not just going in with your lesson plan and saying, you know, let's jump into 2 Nephi and here's the, you know, the dynamics of this scripture and that, but helping people learn how to use the tools that are given to us and not just assume that they're using it. So that's one that comes to mind.
I could just jump in real quickly. So basically what you're talking about is learning how to be a learner in a way.
Yeah.
Right. It's
yeah.
Which is a big important part of this, because we just think that naturally we may be great as learners. We are a learner and we just learn, and that's it. It should come naturally to everyone, but actually there are better ways of learning. And so we can help teach people how to learn at the same time.
Yeah. You know, I'm the type that I've sort of transitioned my brain that, you know, before it was, I felt more comfortable with the actual paper scriptures because I knew like where on the page certain scriptures were, right. And you know, just I could flip and navigate the scriptures so quickly, you know, back from my missionary days, you know. But there's certain tricks and a process to go through to use the electronic scriptures so that now I prefer it, and I'm sort of lost without the electronic scriptures. And you know, if I'm ever called upon to give a last minute talk, you know, in sacrament meeting or whatever, with the tagging system I have, I can jump around and navigate that much quicker than the paper scriptures. So some people will think, well, I think the human brain is designed for, you know, using a physical book. Well, no, it's just been programmed that way. So you just have to change the programming and learn how to be that learner in that context. And it can be a more powerful tool, right? And I don't, you know, no shame on those who are old school and like the paper scriptures. But again, these are just to help to be a resource to maybe the classes you're teaching. Is those that prefer the electronic, you know, method, you can help them understand that and how to leverage that more.
I remember listening to a Follow Him podcast once where somebody did that, and it was so powerful to me because I thought I was pretty familiar with the Gospel Library. Like I kind of, you know, I've used it for quite some time, and I'm not a tech doofus, but I'm also not very savvy. Anyway, I started going through and tracking everything that they were talking about and actually practicing it. And then I took it to my class. I teach an adult religion class for our stake right now. And I remember taking it to the class, and we all went through and did it together. And people were like sharing things that they'd learned as they'd been, you know, trying some of the suggestions out. And it was actually really powerful because I think people get lost and then they're embarrassed to say that they're lost because you may reference something in, you know, Guide to the Scriptures, which isn't in, I'm pointing to my paper scriptures. That's probably dumb. Anyway, it's not in, you know, our paper scriptures. And so you're referencing something from that and they're just like, do, do, do. And they don't necessarily know where to find all of these resources. So that's a fantastic suggestion. Also not to make assumptions about what people already do understand with regard to the app and other resources that are available.
Yeah. Love it.
That's great. Awesome. You're about to say another thing that you were thinking
of. Yeah. Yeah. I can go on too. You know, I interviewed Brad Pelo, who he's actually the president and executive director or executive producer of the Chosen series, which many people know and love.
Yes.
He's become a good friend and former bishop. I think he's been bishop twice. And when Come Follow Me was starting, you know, we were transitioning Come Follow Me, he was called as a Sunday school teacher, and he moved into this ward with just had a ton of people. And, you know, we've all had those wards where you sort of peek into the Sunday school room, which may be, you know, in the Relief Society room, and it's just packed, right? And all the soft seats are taken, and maybe they have an overflow to a secondary classroom. So Brad asked the bishop if he could hold Sunday school in the cultural hall. And usually you think of the cultural hall and like, oh, like that's a huge room. It's echoey. It's meant for basketball. But me personally, I prefer teaching in the cultural hall than any other room because of just how dynamic it can be. Now it may require you to use a mic. And even if you speak loud, let me like assure you that even if you can speak loud, we don't want to hear you like yelling for 45 minutes, like still use the mic. I think the people will gain a better understanding that way. So what he did is he just started the class and put everybody in a pod of people, maybe 5 to 10 people. And he would give them questions to discuss it as a group. Now, this brings me to maybe a more general concern that a lot of people have. There's some people that there's nothing they hate more than hearing the words, turn to your neighbor and share in a classroom, right? And I get it. I'm an introvert. I just want to show up to Sunday school and like sit in the chair and just talk at me. And I know you're not supposed to lecture, but come on, just talk at me. I'm hungry. My nap's coming later, right? But I mean, all the research shows, like, you have to take a classroom of people from a beta state into an alpha state where they're engaging a different part of their brain. And the simplest way to do that is to invite them to share within in groups of people. And so I always bring attention to it when I teach, saying, listen, I know you hate the, you know, 3/4 of the room. I hate the fact that I'm now going to invite you to turn to your neighbor. But what it does is it invites the class to engage on a different level. And those people who aren't likely to raise their hand and comment in that large group setting are actually going to talk more. And those individuals who are like raising their hands 4 or 5 times a class, they're going to feel that need of like, oh, good, I've been heard, I've shared my comments, right? And so it's just a win-win on many areas. But I know our tradition does not facilitate it very often. And even going to, you know, there's this concept in leadership that you are getting the results that your system is designed to produce. You're in a perfect way. And so part of that is even the structure of classrooms or the structure of our buildings. Now, I don't know what's going on in the church architecture department, but these 1970s, 1960s floor plans for churches aren't working for us, and they come follow me age. All right. I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to say it.
Thank and you. That's the problem. Thank you.
Because we're trying to do these classes in the typical, you know, relief society room type of room. And the reality is there's a lectern at the front. There's a bunch of chairs. You can't really move the chairs in any other way than theater style. And so that's why a culture hall with an extra room is really the best place to do these type of things. But I'm sure there's a lot going on depending on your building. You may not have that ability. And so it's important to realize that we're sort of forced in some of these old traditions because just even as simple as how the building is designed. And so to really push through these and say, you know what, maybe we can use the cultural area in a different way, even though it's a little echoey, there's some things we can do to adjust that. And so anyways, I'm kind of on a tangent here, but the point being is that really analyze just even the structure of that room. You're most likely getting the type of class, and it has nothing to do with the teacher. You know, it's almost set up that, yeah, right, they're going to lecture because that's the way it's set up. And so the more you can even break up those, you know, have multiple teachers, not just 2, maybe 3 or 4, so that the class has more room to work with. But I know it's easier said than done than, you know, according to certain buildings and structures.
So you're even talking about having, so you just said something that really intrigues me there. Even, for example, take gospel doctrine class. Have 3 or 4 teachers teaching in different rooms, just smaller. Is that what you were just saying as an example?
Yeah, so here's the interesting thing. I bet if you surveyed the average ward and said, who in here would absolutely love to be a gospel doctrine teacher, right? Or even a youth teacher or teaching Sunday school in some capacity, you would get a lot of volunteers. Like, people, generally, that's a calling that people just love when they get the opportunity to teach gospel doctrine. Now, it's my dream calling. I've never been called the gospel doctrine teacher, so maybe someday in the eternities, I'll be able to teach gospel doctrine. But people just love that, the dynamics that come with that calling, the preparation that goes into it. It really engages you on a deeper level in your personal study. And so my response is, well, why don't we give more opportunity for people to do that? And it shrinks the class down. So you're going to get more, you're going to get better participation, more sincere. They'll feel like they're a little family there in the ward that's meeting and discussing. Now, some people say, well, Kurt, if you do that, if you have 6 classes, if you have 4 classes, everybody's going to go to that one teacher that they love. Well, sure, you got to figure that out, right? To me, that's not an excuse to just have, well, we only have 1 relief society room, and so I guess we'll just have 1 teacher, or maybe we can fit a secondary class in the culture hall. Like, to me, this is where leadership comes in, is really push through these things. So give more people engaged that, man, instead of having 2 people who just love to trade off teaching gospel doctrine, what if you had 6 people or 10 people doing that? Or maybe you invite them to have these small groups in their home. This is something that when Come Follow Me started and they went to the 2-hour church, I believe it was Elder Cook that sort of encouraged this, that now this is something you can do in your home. Well, I think it would be effective for a ward to be very intentional about that and say, yeah, we're calling you as this teacher, but we need you to hold it in your home. Are you good holding it at home? Great. Here's, you know, six families that'll be part of that and invite them over and, you know, whatever. And again, just getting creative. This will facilitate better experiences because unfortunately as I sort of take a general informal survey of people's experience in Sunday school, it's not positive. Like I think a lot of people are there and they're just sort of like, they're feeling guilt that they didn't read, or, you know, they read the first chapter and really dove in, but the teacher decided to teach on the sixth chapter of the lesson plan. And sure. Now they might as well not have read, right? And they have nothing to share that way. And so anyways, I've sort of thrown a bunch of dynamics at you, but that
okay. But they're incredible. So you said this is a tangent, but like, I have to follow this tangent. I interpreted what you said different than what Kevin interpreted it as. But now that you're saying this, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's because I'm such a linear thinker that I just put your comment into the box of what already exists instead of thinking outside the box, which uh-huh. I am capable of. It just took me a minute to jump on board. But I want to step back to my initial reaction to what you were saying. I thought you were really literally just talking about the advantages of breaking up into small groups when right. you're teaching. And so if it's okay, I kind of want to talk about that for just a quick second. Yeah. I know it's a tangent, but I want to go there because good. I'm intrigued by this. I have a really large class that I'm teaching for this religion class. And I'm always hesitant for the exact reasons that you said to have people break up into groups. And there are actually three other things that I see as problematic. One is that it takes a lot of time for people to get situated. Two is that oftentimes they are more excited to talk to each other about what's going on in their lives than they are to talk about the actual content. And three, I don't really have the ability to keep a pulse on everybody because I'm a control freak, not a control freak really, uh-huh. but you know what I mean? Like you just don't yeah. know if it's on track. And so I've been more successful when I've been able to be very specific about what I'm hoping they'll discuss. But what other suggestions do you have if we don't necessarily, you know, have the option to change the infrastructure, but we are trying to change the structure of our class to facilitate some of these smaller group discussions? What recommendations or advice would you have to do it effectively? And what things might we need to avoid or watch out for? Because honestly, just saying break up into groups and here's the question you're talking about is I kind of roll my eyes when that happens sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, so I think the first place you want to start is it's all in the warm up. I don't know if you've ever, I'm sure you have, you're the teacher and you ask a question in a class and they like just sort of blink at you or look at the carpet and you think, you know, and I'm not supposed to lecture. I've got this, so I'm going to bring some questions but nobody's raising their hand. Nobody's participating. Why is that? And it was a therapist who taught me this. He said, there's no such thing as resistance, just the lack of safety. And man, that just hit me. I'm like, wait, so people, they're never resistant. They're actually they just feel unsafe, right? Now, even myself, you know, I do a lot of public speaking. I've done, you know, several firesides. I've spoken to, you know, rooms full of thousands of people, and I can do that, and I'm fine. But even showing up to Sunday school, I'm not necessarily ready to just jump, raise my hand and say a comment. And so sometimes teachers, they get frustrated that their class isn't participating that way, when in reality, they never took the time to warm up the class so that they feel safe to raise their hand and share. And so this dynamic of splitting them up into groups, one, it sort of tapes them down this path of safety. Of like, now you don't have to talk in front of 40 people. You can actually talk in front of 5 people. And in fact, 3 of them, you know, right? Now you say that, well, sometimes if we break them up with groups, they want to just talk about other stuff. Well, maybe that's part of your warm up, right? You get them in groups and say, just talk for 5-10 minutes, because we love the hallway church sometimes more than the actual church, just connecting with people, right? And even with 2-hour church, that's so limited, that hallway connection. So if that's the case, well, let them get them out of their system. And what happens is, they've talked about their week. They've talked about, hey, now I don't know you. What do you do for work? Or, you know, how many kids do you have? Oh, I think I saw your son in, you know, passing the sacrament or whatever it is. They're getting that out of the system, but they're also warming themselves up to the point that now they're in a group that when a sensitive or a more serious spiritual question comes up, they're much more likely to discuss that because you've built that into your into your lesson plan of, yeah, just talk for 5 minutes. Here's some fun questions. And this, I call it the prime the pump strategy of, before you ask questions of what does faith mean? Or what does this, you know, what did Nephi really mean in 2 Nephi 4 as he's pouring out his soul? Like, when have you ever poured your soul out? And I mean, they're cold. They're not going to jump into that. So talk about, hey, what do you love about this ward? Or everybody lives in this town. Like, where's your favorite place to eat? Now share that with your neighbor. And what's happening? You're warming them up. And then they're like, oh, wait, nobody bit my head off when I shared that thing. So maybe I can be a little more personal or sensitive, or you know, share my faith, and they're more willing to listen and absorb that. And suddenly you're building friendships, and that class will warm up much quicker. So
it's creating psychological safety so that people can be more authentic, and the discussion ends up being richer and more authentic as a whole group. I love that. That's a great suggestion.
I remember one guy, when Elders Quorum and High Priest were put together, I was called to be the Elders Quorum president, and we did something similar. We broke everyone up and said, okay, you're going to talk about these questions. Here are the list of questions. Then we come back and talk about them afterwards. But we got into the small group, and I was talking, and there's one brother who doesn't talk, period, to anyone ever. and it was really, I mean, we would ask a question. He never would respond. And a question came up. And I don't remember what the question was, but his answer was, I don't like people. And I thought, you know what? He answered. That was incredible.
Yeah.
He felt safe enough to be able to answer even that he didn't even like people. And great. That was a huge step for us. So these little small groups really do break that down. And I love that you're talking about that, because that's... I think this is outside of the scope of what we typically think as a Sunday school lesson, or even, you know, seminary, for example, we might do that more often, break into little groups. That might be I'll say a tactic that we use, but it helps us to break that down so that we can be more authentic and actually bear our testimony a little bit in what we're saying. Eventually, hopefully, get to that point.
Yeah. You know, as you're saying that, Kevin, it kind of like, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Kurt. One of the things that I feel very passionately about is creating authentic conversations as part of our discussions. And Kevin talks a lot about how to use questions to really get at kind of the heart stuff. Best questions are when we're, you know, kind of tapping into testimony. But sometimes people are struggling with their testimony. Sometimes people are in the middle of a crisis of faith, and it's really, really difficult to speak up about a crisis unless you definitely, you know, have created an environment of safety and people trust each other. I guess one of the things that I would love to get your thoughts on is, you know, for people, like, to create kind of this, you know, hospital for sinners environment that we talk about wanting, like, as a church, we want everyone to feel invited and welcome and safe, regardless of where they are on their own path and regardless of where they are in terms of their faith journey. So what are some of the things that you consider as you're teaching? What are some of the ways that you try and help people feel safe to engage in the hard conversations, you know, as a group? I think it's important. Yeah. And I think it bonds us to each other, and it's really hard to do.
Yeah. Now that's a great question. And, you know, outside every chapel in our faith is a sign that says, you know, the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints, and it says visitors welcome. However, we never assume that visitor actually walked in the building, right? If we could, if we woke up and somehow we were told that 30 visitors, in fact, non-members of our faith are coming to church, how would we act in Sunday school or even sacrament meeting? What dynamics would change there? And there's somebody that I listen to a lot. He's a Baptist pastor. His name is Andy Stanley. And he posts all of his sermons on YouTube. And I just love watching him because he's a master teacher. But one thing he does, and this is a value that he has in his church, is that he says, assume that they're in the room. And so when he's up preaching from the Bible to his congregation, he often says things like, now, for those of you who aren't Christian, you may want to consider this, Or for those of you who are really struggling with your faith right now, you may want to consider this. So I think it would be really beneficial for our community to just assume that they're in the room, right? Oftentimes we assume the most orthodox are in the room. And yeah, maybe you're right, but there are individuals in Sunday school who are struggling, right? I mean, there's no, we've all had personal experience of seeing loved ones who were deeply faithful, deeply committed, who are now have left their faith altogether. And so just taking that step of assuming they're in the room can let them feel like, oh, they're speaking to me. I'm gonna show up next week or the week after that because they're speaking to me. A few other things is that, you know, this is a classic thing that a lot of teachers are encouraged to do, but just be comfortable with that silence. There's oftentimes after I've warmed up the room, and now we're really getting into deep personal maybe struggles or doctrine that is hard to talk about. When I ask a question, I just bathe in the silence. I just love the silence. So I'll just sit in it and I want it to get awkward. And it's amazing when you let it get a little awkward, suddenly, again, you've warmed up the room, they feel some level of safety, somebody will lean in and then that person will share something personal. And then it's almost like permission for the others to lean in and share something personal. Now we talk a lot about on Leading Saints, this dynamic of we want more authenticity in a ward or in a classroom, in an elders quorum, in a relief society. And I hear from many leaders who are like, all right, Kurt, I've listened to this episode, that episode, I'm going to do it, right? And so they begin to lean in and ask really a lot of authentic questions that's going to lead to people sharing their real and raw story. And sometimes it doesn't work. And so they think, what am I doing wrong? A great tactic you can do is actually invite somebody from outside the quorum into the quorum. I think of my friends, Chris and Autumn Bennett, who Chris has experienced a sexual addiction for years and years and has come through that and has a remarkable recovery story. Well, whenever I see Chris and Autumn Bennett, whether it's a fifth Sunday, whether they just go into an elders quorum and Chris tells a story, just him standing there and modeling authenticity, it plants a seed and changes the culture that people begin to think, oh, like this guy came in and shared his authentic story and he survived. Maybe they'd be willing to hear my story, right? And so there's just a few tactics of maybe planting the seed and stimulating more authenticity in a teaching setting.
That's beautiful. I really love that.
Yeah, because that's really hard to get. It's really hard to get to that level of where people want to share. Instead, I think what we find a lot is, like you said, we ask the question and we get stares and they don't want to answer questions or they don't want to really say. And so we're asking almost surface level questions. But I think the rubber hits the road when we're asking these deeper questions.
And let me answer authentic. One more here that I actually learned from. I interviewed this couple who had years and years of experience as nursery leaders. Now, it is probably my most favorite episode of 2023 is when I interviewed this couple who've been nursery leaders. You think, ah, nursery, what's the big deal? You know, you go in there and you pull the toys out and you get the goldfish and oh, look, that's it, right? But they had such a remarkable way of approaching it. Now, those of us who've had young kids go into nursery for the first time, we realize they have a hard time. It's like, why won't they just go in there and play? When in reality, many of you won't refuse to go to Sunday school and play. Or when I say play, I mean participate, right? Again, it's this safety thing. And so what this nursery leader team did is whenever they saw a new, you know, nursery kid that was really didn't want their mom or dad to leave and they just would cry and cry, they would plan a time to go to the child's home and play with the child's toys in his home with them. And then on Sunday, they'd have, again, it's all about that safety, right? There'd be some level of safety for them to do that. And so as a Sunday school teacher, like, you know, given your story, there's that man who's like, man, we can't get this guy to answer any question. We'll go into his world, find a time to go visit him and just say, hey, man, tell me your story. Thanks for letting us over, right? And then they build up that relationship with you that when they see you on Sunday, like, oh, this guy knows me. You know, Julie knows me. She came to my home and had a conversation on my couch. And so I'm willing to participate more. And so again, we're just fostering that safety.
That's great. I love that so much. And what a great example. I mean, I love specifically that it came from nursery leaders. because I feel like it's saying there's not an excuse. There's not a calling where this does not apply, where you going out of your way to develop a relationship does create safety once, you know, you enter the church building and once you're asking people to engage, regardless of what the setting is. I think that's universally applicable.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right. So as you are doing, so you teach in many different ways. You teach to large audience in front of them. You also are on podcasts where it's, you know, seemingly one-on-one, but everyone's listening in on those as well. Going to the more podcast type, what have you learned from podcasts or the videos that you record one-on-one when you're with someone that helps you be a better teacher for maybe a larger group?
Yeah, you know, there's this dynamic that happens in a classroom setting that I've sort of become accustomed to just from the nature of the work I do with doing a podcast and doing interviews, is that when sometimes someone will raise their hand and say a really interesting comment, and just to lead out and be in a state of complete curiosity. Like, I'm not worried about, okay, once he's done, like, okay, I'm going to go to this verse and then let's see what's coming up next. How much time do I have? Like, I try and be 100% present in that moment when that person is communicating. So I may walk over to their side of the room and, you know, stand maybe 10 feet away from him and look at them and hear them. And then naturally, like, being in a state of curiosity, I may ask some follow-up questions. Or it may just be a comment where I just take a moment and say, wow, like that is phenomenal. Like, what comes to mind, everybody, as you hear that? Like, get curious with me. Where can we go with what they're saying, right? And that requires me to really surrender my lesson plan, that cool factoid that I learned on this Come Follow Me podcast or that one, or, you know, I read this Hebrew translation of this world. Like, I've set that completely aside. Maybe I'll get to it. Maybe I won't. But in this moment, like, we're having a community experience right now. We're not having a lesson. We're not having a summary of scripture. Like, we're having a community experience where people are sharing faith. And this person just said something that was really interesting. And I'm going to sit with it and think, what's some follow-up questions? Like, how can we go deeper? Now, one example comes to mind is, I remember I was actually subbing for Gospel Doctrine. And this sister raised her hand and, yeah, that's right. It's like my chance. The sister raises her hand and says this comment about how she was this past week. She was at a funeral for her uncle. And it was sort of just this passing comment. And you could kind of tell that she was talking, like, this principle she was articulating was really hitting home that week. And it'd be easy sort of in that moment, you kind of feel awkward. Oh, I'm making this. She probably doesn't want to cry in front of everybody and let's just move on. But I just said, wait a minute. Like, tell me more. Like, give me the next layer to that, right? And it sort of gave her permission to open up further, to the point that she did cry a little bit more. But you could feel the whole room lean into her experience and sort of offer that prayer and support. And after she came up and just hugged me, because it was such a healing experience for her to be able to have a strong statement of faith when she was really broken inside. And I found out that this funeral she was at was an uncle who actually died by suicide. Like, it was just this heavy, heavy moment for her. And to be able to come to church and, like, share that faith, it was a healing process for her. So when somebody says something that is, like, not only is it interesting or intriguing, but if you feel emotion, like, don't hesitate to, like, dig in a little bit, right? And again, we don't want to pry or really make them feel uncomfortable. If you feel too much resistance, you may back off. But those are the moments when that sort of that person chokes up and he needs to take a moment to gather his composure. It's like, wow, we're having a ward community moment here, and we're building unity. We're hearing faith, and I can't wait to come back next week.
Yeah. I've sometimes when that has happened, I'll even just ask, you know, to just build on what you're saying, I'll ask the question, is it okay if I ask you some more questions about this? You know, just to kind of get their permission and see if they're willing to engage further and go a little bit deeper. And I think that's a way to kind of bridge the gap between, oh, do I push? I don't know. I don't want to embarrass them. And, you know, sometimes where we'd be tempted to pull back and actually being a little bit too pushy, just even asking for permission to engage that's further great. Can help you step into it. I think that's a beautiful point. And one of the things that I think you're saying, without putting the exact words to it, is that our job when people start to share of themselves is to really empathize and try and see things from their perspective. And I love that you're using the word curiosity, like stay as curious as we can. I think that that is, you know, the number one key to empathy is being curious and interested enough and valuing that person enough to want to understand their perspective and kind of see things through their eyes instead of taking and overlaying our own paradigms on whatever it is that they're saying. And that's so validating to people. And so you describe this sister's experience. I think we forget sometimes just what kind of a, you use the word healing. I love that word. And also just almost therapeutic thing. Yeah. It can be for someone to have that opportunity to share and open up and have their faith strengthened and also give other people the opportunity to lend support because they know them better. People can't help you if they don't know you, if they don't know what you're struggling with. And so it creates an opportunity to kind of strengthen relationships within the class as well. I really love that.
Yeah. And maybe another caveat I'll just sort of insert here is that you hear a lot of talk, you know, in our manuals, just in our general direction that it's important that we teach doctrine, right? And so we think, okay, I've got to teach doctrine. Like, let's not venture off into any too many wormholes anyways. And let's, you know, stay with the especially core doctrine. And so people, they sort of get in this mode of like, okay, I got to teach doctrine. I got to teach truth. And you're okay, here's some general authority quotes. Okay, I think I'm on track. But I would take that a step further that we not only need to teach doctrine, but we need to teach doctrine that is redemptive. Something that when I leave that room, I feel like, whoa, like Jesus died for me. Like Jesus is with me. Like I feel like my relationship with him is so pivotal because he can help me through what I'm experiencing right now. Too many times you sort of get the, oh, we're talking about tithing. All right, here's the 10 points on tithing. Are we teaching doctrine? Yeah, sure, we're teaching doctrine. But how is it redemptive? How can it take me to the cross of Jesus Christ and let me know that this week is going to be better, guys, because you have the gospel in your life. You can turn to the scriptures and get more of it. So I think it's really crucial. And that I feel like that moment, that sister, that example I told is she felt this level of redemption as she was speaking her faith. She felt that healing power that comes through Jesus Christ.
That's so good. So there's something that I've noticed in what you've said so far. You've said it a number of times. And when you haven't said it, you have displayed it or told stories about it. Each time you're talking about, you know, you could do this or you can teach this way or whatever it is, you've used the word and have shown an experience again and again. I mean, this doesn't sound like typical. Like you said, right here, I've got to get this point out about 2 Nephi and 2 Nephi 4. And it's, you know, I'm going to make sure that everyone understands that's the Psalm of Nephi. And you know, you just keep going. But rather it's here's the experience and you're diving into them. What can you tell us about the experience part of this, of teaching?
Yeah. So, there's a lot of directions to go, but that, you know, the tradition is we take people to an intellectual level, right? And mm-hmm. that's where we default of the dictionaries, the Hebrew translations. And yeah, those are interesting and helpful. But, you know, Elder Bendar talks about the three layers of that. There's the doctrine, there's the principles, and the application. Like inviting people down to that application level. Like, therefore what, right? Because so many times I feel like we make the mistake of, you know, we see individuals who leave the church and we think, if we could just get them enough historical information, or if they just knew the theology better. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, the number one reason people leave the church is that for whatever reason, they've concluded it doesn't work for me. And for me, my life experience, like, I don't understand all the historical things. And a lot of them, I'm like, you know, I just don't really care one way or the other. I know that's not everybody's journey. But for me, even if it is troubling, I can't reconcile the fact that it works for me. Like, I find redemption and healing. And when stuff gets really hard in life, like, I can work through it with my relationship with God and sitting with him and turning to his word. And right. And so if we can take people to that place of experiencing the gospel, of not maybe we don't want them to leave with too many answers as much as we want them to leave with questions that they'll mull over, they'll take home, be prayerful about, that they're intrigued, and turning them to their own personal journey with the scriptures. So I feel like I'm being a little bit vague here, but the point being is, like, how can we get to that application place? Not to tell them how to apply it, but to take them there and say, how can you apply it? Where do we go from here? Like, this may work for this person, but why hasn't it worked for you? Let's talk about that. And then that experience is what will foster and give them strength to go for the day, to return the following week.
You know, you, Kevin, turned me on to something that you wrote in your blog recently about bad habits that we have as teachers.
Oh, yeah.
And I did resonate with the over-prepare one, because I'm studying the crap out of the scriptures right now. Like, I love the scriptures, and I study and I nerd out on all of the different translations. And so as you're saying that, I'm like, yes, I do that. And I do find that I overprepare a little bit. And even as you're talking, and Kevin is a really good kind of gut check when he and I will have conversations, to go back and really analyze some of the questions that I'm going to ask to make sure that we cross the bridge over to that part of application. And so as you were talking about that, I was thinking, you know, over preparing is only a bad habit. And tell me if I'm wrong, like, because, you know, obviously you thought about this a little bit more maybe than I have, but over preparing is only really a bad thing if we allow that to drive the lesson. If we've got all of it swimming around in our head, and our goal, our primary goal, is to help people experience kind of the redemptive part, the aspect of the gospel that helps them connect with the Savior better, then all the preparation in the world isn't going to get you there. The experience will, and you have to be flexible enough then to go there. And that's hard. Is it because over preparation is a bad thing because of the fact that we get married to what we prepared?
Yeah, bingo. So, you know, we may find, like, you know, day four of preparation, we come across this quote that's just a bombshell quote. I mean, mic drop moment. I'm going to design a slide. We got to get to this quote, right? Well, now there's that pressure of getting to that quote, right?
Totally.
In reality, maybe that quote's just for you, or maybe that's something you can just file away, right? There's no need. There's not a necessity to get to that quote or that thing. But, and then there's this level of, a lot of people aren't comfortable standing in front of people talking, so they're a little bit nervous, and so they think, okay, there's going to be this day where I'm out of everything that I could possibly say, and there's still 15 minutes, and then what do I do, right? So let's make sure that I have too much to say, right? And that sort of just in the nerve of it all, it sort of takes over and drives the lesson, like you said. But I mean, at the end of the day, we should all over prepare every day. I mean, that's, you can't overdo the scriptures if you're learning. So yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just when we allow it to drive the lesson. And that's why the encouragement I give, and this, you know, I appreciate Kevin's perspective in this power of questions, is that instead of preparing a lesson plan, just prepare a list of questions. And maybe those questions came to you in your own study, or you were prompted to answer them, and then invite the class to guide the class through the questions. And then the class will drive the lesson rather than your lesson plan, right?
Yeah, you just talked about how the class can drive the direction that this goes by what they answer, right? And when you're on a podcast, sometimes that happens as well. You're doing that and it kind of takes on a life of its own. Hey, I wasn't thinking about talking about that, but that's great. And it gets deeper in that. You also, in that article that you, Julie, just referenced, also mentioned some other habits that maybe we want to avoid. Is there anything else in there that you're thinking, you know what, as teachers, what have you seen that kind of gets in the way of us creating these redemptive experiences?
Now I need to pull that up in front of me. What else did I say in that?
Well, I can tell you.
It doesn't have to be there. It can be.
You, seeking a class discussion, not focusing on class preparation, were habits 3, 2, and then 1 was over preparing. So it was just those 3 in that article.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would just say, just, it's just getting in a state of mind of that surrender, right? That, and you know, we're encouraged to teach by the Spirit. And I get that you're going to try that sometimes and it's going to go off the rails. And you're thinking, all right, this guy keeps bringing up these esoteric doctrines, or, and this, you know, this person's sharing this weird experience that had nothing to do with anything. I don't know, take me off my game. I don't even know how to respond to that. Right. Like, that is the risk. But that's where like faith comes in, right? Where God can lean in and engage on a different level. And then just being open to mixing it up, like doing something different and getting away from the, you know, stand behind the lectern and go point by point. But, mixing up the class, you know, maybe you'll invite everybody to stack the chairs for the first 10 minutes and let's have a stand-up lesson. Or, I do this, it's called a floor check, where I have a bunch of random pictures. I've even take the, you can order the gospel library pictures.
Right.
And I've ordered that book and I cut the binding off. And so they're all individual pictures. So if I'm in the culture hall, I'll put 30 of those pictures around and say, all right, everybody go stand next to the picture that best represents how your week has gone. Right. And again, you're warming up the class, you're getting them started. And so you can just to mix it up and catch people off guard, because a lot of them are walking in like, okay, now it's Sunday school. I go in there and I usually scroll through Instagram, but at least I'm here. Like, right. So you're engaging them and getting them out of their comfort zone just a little bit and with safety, and you'll have a remarkable life-changing moments that people will cherish.
I mean, I think you hit on something, which is it's really vulnerable as a teacher to do some of these things. Like, there's always a risk involved. And I think that part of it is, you know, you said you kind of stand in the silence and bask in it almost. I think part of what we as teachers need to be okay with is discomfort. We are actually inviting people into, you know, this place of discomfort if we're actually being seekers, if we're having a real conversation. It's going to be a little bit uncomfortable. And so how appropriate for us to model going to uncomfortable places and allowing ourselves to like not always be in control, because you are opening up, you know, you don't know what people are going to say. One question, when you said, you know, you don't always know how people are going to respond and sometimes they'll go off the rails. Like, how do you handle that? I feel like that's kind of a tough thing. I know that, you know, I have certain things that run through my head and I always try and maybe summarize what they've said. So I'm listening really, really closely and try and summarize what they said. And sometimes I can add something to it or steer it a little bit in my response. But like, how do you handle some of those uncomfortable situations?
Yeah. You know, there's sometimes not a perfect way. It's sometimes just saying, hey, thank you for your comment and moving on to your next question, right? Or, hey, let's mix up the groups a little bit, or let's do, you know, let me go to a video clip, or just, you know, you're having some of those backup things on front because you have been studying and saying, you know, there's another scripture that's really interesting that I like to go to. Right. And so, a lot of the class, I mean, the reality is that the individuals in the class, they're rooting for you as the teacher. They don't want to see you up there just melt and embarrassment. And, you know, so you're going to, as you shift, you're going to get people being like, okay, I think I need to help Kurt out here. Let's see. I'm going to make a comment here and help him out. So
that's a good point. We're all on the same team. We got to remember that part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Awesome. Now, as we wrap up here, I want to thank you first off for joining us. And this has been an incredible discussion. So many good ideas thrown around and discussed. And I think I know what your answer will be to this question here, but because you've kind of said it already, not this way exactly, but I want to know, when you teach, whether it is in whatever aspect, I mean, it could be even with your kids, right? That's one thing that we talk about on this podcast, is not only teaching the gospel in a classroom setting, but also what about your kids or sharing the gospel? Those are teaching situations as well.
Yeah.
When you teach, what do you want them and you to come away with in the end?
I would say I have to connect the dots to Jesus Christ. That is the source. He is the source of power. He is the source of redemption. And so they have to see, you know, it's not about just me bearing that testimony at the end, but I'm wanting to convince them of how he's changed me through this, right? And a lot of that comes to speaking from the I, right? Rather than general statements, but to really bring them to, and this is why tithing is so important to our relationship with Jesus Christ. This is why the temple was given to us. This is why the priesthood was restored, so that we can turn to the covenants and facilitate the covenants that Jesus Christ has given us for us to step into relationship with him. Because if I'm in relationship with him, then I can survive tomorrow. Then I can get through the tragedy. Then I can get over the trauma, right? And so I would reiterate that as just connecting the dots back to the redemptive power of Jesus Christ.
So good. Yes.
Beautifully said. I have like all these notes in front of me. I know you guys kept seeing me look down. I'm sorry, but I just have to say that there have been so many practical things that I'm taking away from this, in addition to just kind of, I don't want to say philosophical because that sounds, it's the wrong word, but you know what I mean? Just kind of some shifts in my approach to the classes that I teach because of some of the things that you've shared. It's been really, I mean, not just, you know, inspiring because I know you've done so much great work in, you know, this arena of teaching, but also just really kind of helpful. And so I'm really grateful personally for the time that we spent today. Thank you.
I agree. Well, I think I'm going to have to go back again. It's one of those that I'm going to have to go back and listen to it again. And I hate listening to my own stuff. It sounds so weird, but I'm going to have to do it anyways, just so I can remember everything that was said today. So thank you, Kurt.
And I know the feeling. And sometimes I'll listen to episodes or interviews I actually did. I'm like, did he really say that? I totally missed that. You know, because you're in a different frame of mind when you're doing the interview rather than washing the dishes and listening to a podcast.
Right. Yeah. Totally. So true.
Totally.
So everyone here, if you would, please like, share, subscribe, get notifications, and share this with your ward members, your friends, your family, so that they can be more effective teachers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Again, Kurt, thank you very much for coming on and joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Bye.